Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hello. Welcome, AfterBuzzers, to the Beverly Hills 90210 special. I'm your host, Chelsea Overacker, and in studio, I have Brian H. Kim, who is a composer for the Reboot Show.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for joining
me. Thank you for having me.
And Brian here has quite an impressive resume. He has not only produced, but he has created musical hits for How I Met Your Mother, Bones, Search Party, Significant Mother, Star vs. the Forces of Evil, and movies including Hello, My Name is Doors, and GBF. That's quite impressive. You're a busy guy.
It's funny seeing it like all on a list.
It is. It's like, yeah. Okay, I did do that. But Anyways, before we get into this, I just want to ask, what are your thoughts on this reboot show? Because when I was hosting the after show, we got a lot of mixed reviews on it because people thought, okay, they're just going to pick up right from where they left off at. But it's a little bit more digging into their lifestyle.
Yeah.
What was your thoughts on the reboot show?
Loved it.
Yes.
From the first minute I saw the first frame, I was super into it. Because they sent me the script and they sent me some a little bit of footage for it when I was demoing for the show. And actually, at the time, I was not really trying to get any jobs anywhere because I was about to move. I had just had a second kid. And I told my agent, I was like, I think I'm going to just like take a little break for a little while.
Yeah.
And then they sent me the materials for BH 90210. And I was like, oh, I kind of want to do it.
Yeah.
So I sort of went against what I said I was going to do because I liked it so much. And I thought it was just a really clever way of, you know, everybody's doing reboots and rehashing a lot of old material now, just with the amount of content that networks are creating and stuff. And it's fun for fans of the original properties. And I thought this was a really cool way to pay homage to fans and to pay homage to the original series, but not just be a reboot or a sequel. Just do something that hadn't really been seen, you know, in this form before, and I thought that was really cool.
Did you get to meet the cast?
No. I unfortunately have not. I started on the show too late. I did get to work with a ton of them sort of remotely because they were filmed in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And so, we had to do some songs for the series. Like, Brian Austin Green has a song that he sings, for example. And so I produced it with him mainly over the phone and over the internet, which is really funny because I used to work in a studio down the street from where he lived at the time, and I would see him, and so I've been around the same area as him. I just not this time.
Oh, that's cool. So you guys know each other.
Oh yeah.
Have you guys met face to face before?
No.
No. Well, that's still going to happen.
We are very familiar with each other's voice at this point, though.
Okay, so like he might, if you're in a grocery store and he hears your voice, he'd be like, "I know you. We've been talking."
I hope so. I hope he's not like, "Oh, that terrible person." No. Who I had to deal with.
I highly doubt that.
Yeah.
So when you're writing, do you get the script ahead of time in advance, you kind of know what you're going to be able to compose?
I usually do get the scripts just as part of like the regular distribution of the scripts on the show. I usually don't start writing to the scripts though, because so much of what I do is very timings based and depends on the editing, and it depends on sometimes like the color scheme of the shot and that sort of thing. And so I'm usually one of the last people that gets to work on an episode. A lot of the times the episode is completely locked, the editing is 100% done, nothing's going to change in the picture except for all like the sound and some visual effects and that sort of thing. I usually just get to see a nice sort of shiny finished project. So I'm not there for a lot of the nitty gritty, unless there's a song, in which case I need to get involved before filming.
Yes.
So they have the material to film too. Like Jamie Walters comes back and he sings how do you talk to an angel?
I love that.
So scene. Great. So yeah, great. It was awesome. But he had to come to my studio to record that. And I wasn't fully unpacked. And so I had to like put a sock over the microphone because I couldn't find these little pop filters that are over these microphones.
Love
now.
It.
But he was so cool and so chill. He thought it was so funny, and we just like it set actually a really nice tone for the recording session because we just kind of just relaxed and had a good time. And it was crazy having him sing that song like 3 feet in front of me.
Yeah,
you know, having grown up on that song, being a child of the 90s. Yeah.
So when you're in the studio, mm-hmm. do you get to see the scene, but there's mm-hmm. just no music to it. So that's mm-hmm. how you work. You just watch the scene. Mm-hmm. And then do you kind of have free range, or does the director say, this is what I'm looking for, try mm-hmm. to give me this type of beat?
Yeah, so a lot of the times, especially on a new show, mm-hmm. they will cut in some temp music, which is just music from other projects that they were just using while they were editing. And I think one of the reasons I got on this show was because a lot of the temp music was actually mine in the pilot. And so it was from other parts. Like, some of it was from GBF. So they had those scores, and they could just sort of slot those in. And so there was already a little bit of an idea of where they wanted to go when I started working on the pilot. But I ended up scoring the pilot, like, 4 times, just because each attempt that we did was, like, not quite right, you know? And then we would go back, and we'd do it again, and we'd go back, and we'd do it again. Just a back and forth between me and the showrunners, and all the actors are producers, and so they also got to see a lot of the early cuts and see what the score was. And I knew the director on the pilot as well, Liz Allen. Mm-hmm. And I worked with her before, and she's lovely. And she got to see some stuff, and we got to go back and forth a little bit on what that music was going to be. And once we kind of figured out the tone of the show, mm-hmm. Which is this kind of beach pop, really fun sort of sound, then we were just sort of off and running. And then from episodes 2 onwards, it was a lot of just like, yeah, just see what works, you know, just like try stuff. And then, you know, I would send it off to the showrunners, and if they had notes, they would get them. But a lot of times it was just like, yeah, we sort of figured it out in the first episode, and we could just kind of sprint from that point.
That's really interesting. Yeah. And the fact that you can use some music that you produced and created mm-hmm. on other projects, you kind of bring it over. Mm-hmm. So you have a theme, and you kind of have a style already that you're creating for yourself,
I guess. Yeah. For this one, they used music from GBF because that also was a very soapy comedy kind of thing.
Yeah.
That took place in high school. It was more like a teen sort of thing. But that sort of, it also had a retro vibe to it.
Uh-huh.
The movie was GBF is a very sort of John Hughes for like the 2000s era sort of deal. And so that vibe kind of worked in a lot of the temp for 90210. But we had to update it because they didn't really want the music of 90210 mm-hmm. to be 100% retro, because it wasn't exactly a reboot. You know, if they were still in high school or like hanging out at the Peach Pit all the time, then like maybe I think they would have had a little bit more retro stuff in the score. But we updated a lot of it and just made it feel a little more modern.
No, yeah. I loved it. Like, I, when I was watching hearing a theme song, mm-hmm. I was dancing to it. I was like, hey, this is really good. I'm loving this.
I'm glad. Yeah, that was one of the theme songs that we use on the show are actually my demos to get on the show. They just wanted, but while I was auditioning for the show, that was part of the process, was giving my take on what the theme song would be. I did it a couple of times, but I think the one they use most on the show, they use both of the ones that I created, but the one they use most on the show has a sort of like big beat pop sort of feel to it. And it's really fun. I couldn't believe I got to do it, you know?
Well, with auditions, though, mm-hmm. how does that work with a composer? Because I'm an actress mm-hmm. or, you know, a host.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go and audition, I just have to, you know, they see my reel. If they like me, mm-hmm. they come in, I read my lines. Or if I'm hosting something, I go in, and sometimes they'll just give me, like, a live read to do.
Mm-hmm.
But how does your audition process work?
So I'll just use 90210 as an example. So for 90210, there was sort of a creative brief sent out amongst agencies and composers, I guess, about the sort of vibe they were going for it. And then I put together a folder of like 20 MP3s of my previous work. A lot from shows that you had mentioned. A lot of it was from Search Party. A lot of it was from GBF and Doris mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And that was my ring. That's really loud.
Sorry. No, you're fine.
And then based on that, then I think they narrowed down their search a little bit, and then they gave me some clips to write to, one of which was for the theme song. And then I wrote for my versions of the theme song and some other cues for it. And then from that, they made the list smaller. And then I got to go in for an interview with the showrunners. Mike Chesler was there, and the music supervisor, Heather Guibert, was there. And the director, Liz Allen, as I mentioned, was also there. And then we just talked about what I thought the show should sound like. And it's funny because I went in there with a very specific idea, and I had a good pitch. I like worked on it in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I was like walking around in the lobby, you know, thinking about it. And I went in and I pitched it, and they were like, yeah, no, that's not what we want. That was the first thing. That was the very first thing. And then, you know, then there was a back and forth of being like, okay, so like from what I said, like what is good, what is bad, what are the things that you guys wanted to bring into it? And then by the end of the meeting, we had sort of figured that, I guess, that they would like to work with me. I obviously wanted to do it.
Yeah.
I left the meeting being like, oh, I really blew those first 5 minutes.
As soon as you said, this is my idea, they're like, no,
that's not what we wanted. But by the end of it, I guess I had said something that they liked. And so I got a call a couple days later when I was at lunch and I couldn't believe it.
Well, that's really exciting. One audition, though, that's interesting. I read it was a blind audition that you had, and it was for the Star versus the Forces of Evil.
Star versus the Forces of Evil, yeah.
Okay, and you were going against 7 different composers for that, for the audition process?
I don't know exactly. I don't know. Somewhere in that range, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was one where Disney TV animation is really cool in that for shows where they have the opportunity to do this, where there isn't a composer already lined up for it, they will gather a bunch of samples from a lot of different composers and then play them for the show creators with no names attached to the music. So it's not like the show creators who are watching the music clips have a sense of who that composer already is, especially if they've done a lot of work and that sort of thing. So they have no preconceived notions of the music that they're listening to. They're just looking at it as a piece of music against a piece of picture and whether or not it works. And I hadn't really done a lot of TV or any animation before Star versus the Forces of Evil. And so, yeah, I got it based on a few music clips that I wrote to the first episode. And Darren Nefcy, the show creator, saw it and saw something that she liked. And it was that was crazy. That was a crazy one to get.
That's a huge compliment.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
It is. Just a few seconds of them listening to it. And they're like, okay, we want that guy.
Yeah, yeah. I sort of can't believe it. Everybody has like a little bit of like imposter syndrome when they've been doing this for a while. Uh-huh. And they're like, do I actually know what I'm doing most of the time?
Right.
But it's nice to have somebody be like, that was good. I liked that.
Well, it's amazing.
Yeah, I can't believe it. Yeah.
And you have such an interesting background.
Mm.
So you went to Yale University.
I did.
But then you got a music degree with Yale. Mm-hmm. How did you get into the music? Why did you choose that?
I originally went to Yale to study pre-med. As a very
Me
good
too.
Oh, you did too.
Well, not Yale. I didn't get into Yale. No, not Yale. But
that was your first that was your first path. Were your parents doctors or nurse in the family or anything? Or
no. Okay. I always liked nursing. I loved chemistry when I was in high school. And then you know, you always have to do like those career paths.
Yep.
And mine led towards the medical field. And I'm thinking, Grey's Anatomy, this. Absolutely.
Yeah. I loved ER when I was growing up.
Right?
I thought it was a great thing. My dad was a doctor. My mom was a nurse. It was just sort of this thing that was, you know, I thought was expected of me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm Korean-American. That's sort of like a stereotype for a lot of Korean, for a lot of Korean people to go into. Doctor, lawyer, engineer, that sort of thing. But I went to Yale for pre-med and hated it. Just hated it so much. I couldn't stand it. Like, I had a lot of friends who were doing it, and I saw how happy they were doing it. So every day, going to chemistry, going to lab, and I just wanted to go to my acapella group's practices, and I just wanted to record albums with them, and I just wanted to tour, and that's like all I wanted to do. And so by the end of it, I graduated with a music degree, and then had no idea what I wanted to do with the music degree. And then was a teacher for a couple of years out of DC at at a private school, and thought that was awesome. But, you know, by the end of the second year, just sort of wanted to do what I was teaching instead of just teaching it. I was pretty young, and I felt like I hadn't really explored that much. I packed my bags and moved to Los Angeles, and I went to USC. I went to their film scoring program and got an internship while I was at school, and that was in 2008, and I just have been doing stuff ever since. You know?
Just been booking?
Just been working. Gigs. Yeah, I was an assistant for almost 5 years. That's how I worked on How I Met Your Mother. I was actually the assistant to that composer, John Swihart, for a number of years. But he felt like, because I'd done so much musical theater and a cappella, there's a lot of songs on How I Met Your Mother. And so he felt like when a song came up, he's like, oh, this is something I can have Brian do, and I can sort of focus on the score, and so we could, you know, divide and conquer and that sort of thing. The background that, you know, that I had, that I wasn't initially trying to be a composer, I wasn't in a band, I just sort of like did a bunch of different things, that's it's come in handy in life.
I think that's kind of the best way to go into a career, because sometimes when you have it too planned out, it never goes the way you want it to.
Sure,
and that's kind of how I got into my career as well. Like, I was from nursing
all
the way to, I was like, I like my acting classes way better.
So, and then you gotta follow that, you know, because if you're forcing yourself to do something you don't want to do, then you could maybe not be happy on it ever.
Good point. And a career is a huge part of what you do every single day.
Oh my God, yeah, so many hours.
So many hours. So, well, that's, I give you props, because going to Yale for med school, then changing and being like, yeah, we're going to go to music.
Yeah, my parents, it took them a little while to be like, okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, and then, so when you're creating a piece, is it harder or more difficult to compose something that's more upbeat, happy, sad? You know, I guess it just really depends on the project that you're working on.
Yeah.
But when you get a project, you know, do you like to kind of do you have like a theme? Do you kind of like to create more of like the upbeat that you have in Beverly Hills or something, you know, a little bit more dramatic?
You know, it really just depends on like the characters and what they're doing on the show. It's the most satisfying when I feel like there's a build up to an event that happens in the season, and that music that I've written earlier in the season can sort of foreshadow it and sort of lead into it. And then when we get to that really big event, then I can sort of let the music really sing, because I sort of laid groundwork earlier in the season. And so fans of the show or fans of the music can remember that I'd sort of built something up into that moment. So like for me, that's like the most satisfying thing. In 90210, in the first episode, when Tori is on the plane talking about the dress and how the dress represents everything that they had done together over the years, The showrunners were really into having something there that was like a 90210 quote family theme, because there's a lot of scenes throughout the series of all the actors being together and sort of having these really big group moments together, and so they wanted a melody that could be reused for the rest of the show, and so for me that was really satisfying, because I could plant it there in the first episode, and then later on in the show, what's a good scene where that happens? When Brian introduces his son, or the child who he thinks is his son. Spoiler.
Still a mystery.
I know, still a mystery. Like that was a moment where everybody was together. It was a big moment for everybody, and I used the theme then. There's a moment where Gabby is talking about how she's upset that she was older than everybody else in the original series and how it's really hard for her to fit in, and then everybody sort of rallies around her. I used that family theme again in that moment. And so whenever I could do that, I felt like I was giving the score some cohesion, but also helping with the audience, just sort of tracking like, oh, these are moments when everybody's together and they're all sort of letting their all emotions out.
Yes.
So for me, that's what I love. I love doing that throughout a TV show or through a movie, just sort of, you know, planting seeds and then letting those seeds grow into something really cool later on.
That is cool.
Yeah.
No, that's amazing. And when you're composing something, you said it takes you anywhere from 3 days to 2 weeks to complete the project.
Sure.
And that's kind of a wide range.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, like there was one episode of 90210 that I had 3 days to work on, because I got picture on Monday night, and then I had Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday was the mix. That was, of course, the episode that had the most music in it.
Yeah.
And so that was fun. But it just depends on the project, you know. Star versus the Forces of Evil with Disney. For a lot of their animated series, they have a pretty regimented process that's a 2-week process for each episode. And so it was just really just sticking with that process and looking at the calendar and always making sure I hit those dates. But yeah, for a movie, I think for Doris, I think I had like 2 months to work on that one, which is really cool.
That's cool.
So I could just sort of slow down a little bit and let the music breathe and just like really fine tune and nitpick on a lot of things. GBF, I think I also had about 2 months. And so, yeah, it just depends on the project and the time frame that they're on. And if the time frame is really short, I don't really have any time to second guess myself. I just kind of have to sprint through it. But if the time frame is longer, then I can go back and just really like meditate on things and just see if everything is flowing exactly the way that I want it to.
Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor's going to distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
And when you're in that process of trying to plant that seed, how do you create your music? Do you like use like keyboards?
Sure,
do you sing sometimes? Or
I sing a lot.
You could sing.
Yeah. I can. I'm not going to sing on this.
Okay. Okay.
I have a computer set up in my studio. Mine's relatively simple. A lot of studios will have guys who work on, you know, six computers sort of working in conjunction with each other. But I like keeping mine pretty simple and clean. Just I don't have like a big staff or like an army of assistants or anything. And so it's really just me in like a little cave just sort of making stuff. So I have one computer with a ton of synths and a ton of keyboards hooked up to it. I have like six or seven guitars. I have a piano and like a bunch of small percussion instruments just lying around. My kids love just coming in there and just like picking up stuff. I have to be like, stop, that's very breakable.
Don't touch that.
Yeah, please don't touch that. But it's me sitting in front of a computer very often in the dark, very often late at night, or, you know, whenever I can get some time in, and just, you know, sitting at the keyboard, plunking out melodies, moving to the piano if I feel like sitting at the computer is not really working for me, picking up a guitar if I feel like another instrument's not really working for me, and just trial and error, man. Just cranking out melodies and see which one really does it for me, and then just going from there. There's no plan a lot of the time. It's just like, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to write stuff today, and then we'll see what happens.
That's impressive, you know, and especially something that, you know, that comes out like when you're singing and then trying to like put it together and make it sound right. Because like when you sing, for example, with your tone, you want it to all flow together and not everybody has that talent. And I just discovered that I don't have that talent. I did karaoke the other night and in my mind I was thinking, okay,
I'm crushing it.
yes. It was the B2K Bump Bump Bump.
Yep.
And I was thinking, oh, I know this song. Yeah. Baby, turn around. Let me see that sexy body go.
That sounds
bump,
great.
Bump.
Yeah.
No. I thought so too. But then when I got on stage, you know, everyone was cheering because like the tone, of course, like they love it. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I started singing, the cheering stopped.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. But
you
no.
You should go back. You should do it again.
I don't know. It was a kind of a first last time type of thing.
Okay.
But no, that's what's so impressive is that something that you can create and it comes out the way you want it to.
Yeah. That's
most of the time.
Most of the time. I think sometimes it doesn't, but yeah, I get a lot of ideas on my dog walks or like in the shower. And so I'm not actually at my desk, like when I need to be writing something down. And so there's a lot of voice memos on my phone, just like me walking around my neighborhood, just like singing into my phone. And then like I get to my studio later and then import that into my software and then just try to actually like write around a voice memo, because that was the only time I could record it and put it down. And it's just sort of, you have to deal with it as it comes. I have a notebook that I carry around with me and have this like weird shorthand that I can read that consists of like numbers and sticks and stuff like that. If I'm like at the mall or like, so a lot of times it happens like if I'm in an airport and I'm working on something and something comes to mind, then I'll just take out the notebook and like write a bunch of numbers and a bunch of sticks, and then later when I go home I can try to decipher what it was I was like thinking in my head. But yeah, it's like you never really know when the melody is going to come, and you have to be able to write it down in some way and then put it to paper later. You know?
Have you ever woken up like at 2 a.m. in the morning and be like, that's it, I have to write this down or create a voice memo?
Yes.
I hear that a lot.
I have. The last time I did it was for 90210, and it was for a scene, and my cue got cut.
It was
replaced with a song, and the song is much better. But yeah, it happens. I can't really do it with the kids sleeping in the room anymore.
Right.
But it used to happen much more.
Because your studio is just downstairs in your basement?
It's just downstairs. It's in the living room. California doesn't have basements. I wish they did sometimes.
Oh,
it would be
true.
A little bit more useful for soundproofing. But yeah, it's just in a back living room. It looks out onto our pool. It's a nice place to work.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Sounds very nice, very peaceful and relaxing.
Yeah, there's actually a little chunk of the studio that I set up with like a yoga mat. It's just like so Californian. I'm like embarrassed talking about it. With a yoga mat and like some stuff there. So if I just need to like stretch in the middle of the day, I'll just go there and just stretch there. And I'm just like so embarrassed that I just said that.
No, we all have to have that. It's a good way to just come up with new music too. So
yeah, hopefully one day.
Has there been any projects, all the projects that you've been on, has there been one that you really struggled with that was just not coming together?
Oh God. I mean, look at the list that you have in front of you. You know, the one for, so I did one episode of Bones. They had a musical episode of Bones that was around two rival a cappella groups. I know the music supervisor on Bones, Andy Gowan, who's a friend of mine, and he knew that I did a bunch of a cappella stuff in college, and that there was something that I could do. And so it was a lot of mashups. It was like a mashup of Sia and Patsy Cline, and there was a bunch of like just like big a cappella dance numbers a la Glee, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the sets from Glee is actually used on the episode, so it was weird to have that if you were fans of both shows. Anyway,
I was a huge fan of
Yeah, and so So that one was really, really hard, not because it wasn't coming together necessarily, but it was so many songs and so many singers to wrangle. It was two. We hired two groups from UCLA to come and sing for it.
Wow.
And one called Random Voices, one called Bruin Harmony, and we brought them in, and it was like 30 singers to record, and each one had to record individually, and then we also sang with Pentatonix on it, which was a really big deal for me because I love Pentatonix, and it was like, very hard not to geek out the entire time. And Sam Suey, who was like a YouTube star, he also came in and sang on it. So it was all these very, just so many different tracks to try to wrangle together. And we had one marathon day at a recording studio where it was just one person at a time. Next. And just sort of praying that and trying, like desperately trying to keep track of everybody that was recording and just praying that I was going to have everybody in the end. And then at the end of it, we weren't planning on this, but I did forget a couple of things to record, and so then I had to go in and then record a couple of percussion lines or some bass lines or something that I know how to do. But that was just, I remember just like sitting there throughout that day and drinking so much coffee and desperately trying to keep track of everybody who was coming in to record and just feeling like really overwhelmed by it. But in the end, I think the songs turned out really cool and they got a lot of traction on YouTube and social media. Oh, and okay. Pentatonix has such a huge following and they tweeted it out and stuff like that. And so the songs ended up really great. I still listen to them in my car sometimes if I have a free moment and want to just like reminisce about the past. But God, that one, I just remember it being such like a brain melt. I couldn't keep track
that
of it.
That one was, well, that's a
and it worked
lot.
Out. And it worked out.
It worked out.
In the end. But yeah, that was a hard one.
And I think with those projects, it's, you remember it the most, but it's the most rewarding too.
Yeah. It's just like all those hours and all of that time spent thinking about it. Actually, it turned out and we actually made songs that people like.
And it got good coverage too on YouTube and stuff. So yeah, we had a lot of fans.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I got a lot of emails on my Tumblr that week.
There you go.
About what it was like working with Pentatonix.
Oh, that's awesome. But, well, speaking of our fans, AfterBuzzers, this one is for you. We just want to say thank you so much for making AfterBuzz TV the ESPN of TV talk. In order to help us grow, we ask if you please subscribe to our YouTube channel, leave us a comment, and give us a rating on iTunes. Again, we really just want to thank Kevin and Maria for creating AfterBuzz TV because we're able to engage with you guys as fans and do what we love. Okay, thank you.
Well done.
Thanks. Yeah. So next, we have our fun segment.
Okay.
And we have a couple of demos in the studio of what you created for Beverly Hills 90210.
Okay.
And the first one we're going to play is the first version of the theme song.
Okay.
And then you can kind of just let me know what your thoughts were on when you were creating this.
Okay.
So here it is.
Man. Yeah.
I could already tell the difference because I've had to listen to the original one.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And when I listened to yours, I was just dancing.
Okay.
Like, I love it.
Thank you. That was very much the goal of it, was just to make it feel like a modern pop song. The melody of it is so iconic, you know, and it's instantly recognizable. And I didn't want to mess with it too much. I didn't want to mess with it at all, honestly, because if I change that melody at all, it's going to stick out like a sore thumb and it's not going to honor the original one. And so for me, it wasn't about changing like the main element of it. It was about creating a rhythm section behind it that felt modern, that felt fun, that felt really upbeat. And so I used to write a lot of dance music in college. Yeah, it's not good. We're never going to hear it ever again. It's so bad. But I used to write a lot of very bad dance music in college. And so I've been working with drum machines for a very long time. And just like creating a big pop beat like that is really satisfying for me. I started there and just built around it. And just, you know, there's some acoustic guitar buried in the background there just to give it a little bit of a more like a raw flavor in some moments. And then big pop drum fills, you know, taken from pop music and EDM and some house music, just like throwing a bunch of colors at the wall and seeing what sticks. And then, that one turned out really cool. And it's funny, that guitar solo, my gear was really acting up that day, just like so bad.
Really?
Just like a lot of noise. I didn't know, I'd gotten some new equipment. I didn't know if the new equipment was like kind of fighting with each other, or if like somebody, like a neighbor, had gotten a new piece of electric equipment that was messing with my cables or something. And so I had to do a lot of really weird workarounds to get that guitar to sound normal.
Uh-huh. Oh, there it is.
Yeah. And then in the effort of making it sound normal, I made it sound like it in a way that I can't really match anymore.
Uh-huh.
Because in my current studio, I don't have all that weird interference that I was trying to get rid of.
Yes.
And so that guitar sound, which I think is pretty cool sounding, was a sort of like happy accident that I'm probably never going to be able to create again. But I'm glad I recorded it that day and that it stuck, you know?
Yeah, so it was a good accident that worked itself out.
All the freaking out that I did about getting rid of all that that was on the track, it turned out okay.
No, I love it. And then we have a second version of the theme song.
Mm-hmm. This is one for the end credits.
Yes.
Yep. You're going to notice here, so this is the guitar solo from the original one that you just heard. They needed me to add an extra phrase at the end. And it does not sound the same as the one coming before.
Wait for it.
Right there?
Yep.
Not the same.
No, not the same at all.
And that's cool. I think the fact that I just outed myself about that is probably the only time that anybody was ever going to notice that it was different. But I tried really hard to recreate the original tone on it, but they needed the theme to be like 3 seconds longer. And I was like, I can't just copy and paste what just happened before, so I'm going to try to like make the tone happen again. And I got it really close. And I think, again, 99% of people listening are just not going to hear that it's different. But for me, every time that I hear it, I'm like, oh, it's not quite the same.
And this is what I love to talk about, because with me as a viewer, I'm just like, oh, yeah, it sounds great. It sounds the same.
Mm-hmm.
But as a composer, you can pick up on those little things that it's just so different. It's just like, it's just 1 second.
It's like a 2 second guitar phrase that just sounds, to me, just like it's not quite the same amp that it's running through. But I mean, it's still cool. I still can't believe I got to write it. Getting to write a 90210 version theme song is pretty wild.
Yeah. What a huge accomplishment.
It's
seriously.
Crazy. It's so weird.
So the first theme song that we listened to, that's for the beginning. And then the second one was for the end credits.
In the show, you don't actually use my first one for the opening credits. For that minute long opening credit sequence, that really retro one, they actually use the original, which I think works really well. Because the opening sequence has a very retro vibe to it, and it makes sense to have the original theme song over that. So my first one that you heard is used as a cue throughout the show.
Okay.
Whenever they need to reference the theme song. And then the second one you heard is just the end credits that I did.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. And the next one we have is the Good Luck Ritual.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty.
Thanks.
I can hear a lot of the guitar in this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really simple finger picking.
So how long did it take you to create this one?
I don't know. I think if cumulatively, like the previous versions of the cue that I did, I think this one was like a version 4 or a version 5. I don't know. I think something like that probably, just to write it, probably takes me like, I don't know, an hour, hour and a half to do something like that.
Wow.
To do something of that length. But I'm sure I'd spent many previous hour, hour and a half like leading up to it with the versions that didn't work. But yeah, that was for a scene with Brian and Tori,
mm-hmm.
who are sort of like a... The showrunner described them as like a Ross and Rachel for the series.
Love it.
Yeah, I'm just being like, well, there won't they? They're sort of, you know, prior to these people who seem obviously very well paired for each other, who do not end up with each other. But that is when Brian is really nervous backstage, and Tori comes over and they practice their ritual that they used to do before going on screen together, which is just going like, and then rubbing their hands together, that sort of thing.
Yes, I remember it.
And they wanted that to feel like a moment between, like a really sweet, tender moment between them. And so the queue is very small and it's not super fast and just has a couple of guitars and some piano. And we use that melody a couple of times throughout the season as Brian and Tori have more moments together. There is a moment towards the end of the first episode where Brian is looking on his phone and seeing a bunch of very positive comments about his very sexy mugshot picture.
Yes.
And we actually bring this melody back because the showrunners wanted you to feel like he was thinking of that moment that he had earlier with Tori helping him and gaining confidence and being like, here's another moment where he can gain confidence and then take another step in his career.
Yeah. When I listened to this the first time, I was like, this is so pretty.
Oh,
and it really
God,
fits the scene.
Thank you. Thank you.
No joke. I was thinking, you know, you should write for my wedding.
I wrote for my wedding.
You should.
It's something that I can do.
I'm going to hold you up to it. I still have to find the groom. I haven't found the husband yet, but
one step at a time.
Well, yeah, small steps.
You have the music figured out.
I have the music figured out first.
You're good to go with that.
So yeah, we have it.
Yeah.
Okay, and then our last one is our dress.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Very high on the guitar with a lot of sustain on it. Mm-hmm.
You're very talented on the guitar.
Oh, thanks.
Very talented.
And they mentioned Luke.
Yes.
A little bit, yep.
Yeah, because this is when they're on the airplane and she's giving that speech saying, look, we all have to come together. Let's do this reboot.
Mm-hmm. He's being proud of what they created in the past. That sort of thing.
And what I like about this is, you know, the last one, it's still like a romantic type of feel. Mm-hmm. This one is kind of too, but it's just different the way you're strumming it on the guitar and the sounds and the melodies.
We wanted it to feel really warm and we wanted it to have a really clear melody so that when we brought it back, as I was saying earlier, when we bring it back throughout the rest of the series, it would cut through and it would sing and people would hopefully pick up on that this was a theme that we were using over and over again. Yeah, it's funny. So I was like, oh, yeah, you're pretty good at guitar. I was like, oh, yeah. Some days I'm just like, my fingers are so slow. Because I didn't start playing guitar until I moved out to L.A. About 10 years ago or 11, 12 years. What year is it? 2019? 12 years ago. I started playing guitar a couple years after I moved out here because I felt like there was so much work that I thought that I could do, except for the fact that I did not know how to play guitar. And so I took like 6 months of lessons and then just started teaching myself and watching YouTube videos and that sort of thing. Yeah, because
you took classes, but you taught yourself.
Most of it, yeah, which is why I think I do a lot of things wrong, but I do them how it works for me. And that seems to be fine. I mainly played piano most of my life. I played piano since I was very young.
Uh-huh.
And that was always just sort of my thing. But guitar was something I picked up out here and I love it, and I love going to guitar stores and just playing different guitars and just testing them all out. And you know, right before 90210, I like went to a guitar store and just like sat for a couple of hours, not even knowing that I was going to have this show eventually, and just like found a guitar that I really loved because I just like really wanted a new guitar, and that ended up being the guitar that I used on this show too. Just like, and so it just that process of finding a guitar that you connect with is really cool and not something I had until moving out here.
That is very interesting. And with these demos, it gives you a good variety of what you could do. I mean, we go from like the beachy theme song to like a low, romantic, warm tone.
So, the show has a lot of different tones. It's very funny. It's very warm. It's very romantic. And it's very upbeat. And so, and there's a stalker plot. And so you have to have like stalker music in the show too.
Yes.
And so it was covering a lot of bases. But I felt like a lot of the projects that I'd work on before coming to this project, I felt like I built the right tools that I needed to build. And so by the time I got to this show, I had an idea of what I wanted to do for each sort of moment. And I didn't have to think too hard because I didn't have that much time to think too hard, honestly.
Well, love it.
Thanks.
Are there any projects that are coming up that you're going to be a part of that you can say?
The one that I think I can talk about is that I have, you know, the ABC Family, now Freeform, that network.
Yes.
They have their 25 Days of Christmas.
Yes, Christmas lover.
I did a Christmas rom-com for Freeform that I think is really cool. And very, very, it's like such a niche genre, but I love rom-coms and I love holiday movies. Like Love Actually is like such a good movie, and
so
like
good.
so one of those things that I've watched over and over again. And so yeah, that is coming out at some point during Freeform's 25 Days of Christmas. I do not know when, but it is called Ghosting. It is probably what you think it is about. given the title, but I won't really spoil anything. But yeah, it has a great cast, and it's a really sweet movie. I got to record a live orchestra for it to give it that big holiday feel. And whenever you get to do that, that always feels really special. And so that is the one that is I know that it is coming out, and I know when it is coming out. So yes, I can talk about that one.
Excellent. Well, I'm a Christmas lover. I'm all into the Freeform 25 Days of Christmas.
So much fun. I hope you like this one.
I'm going to check it out. Cool. I'm excited.
Cool.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining me in studio today.
Thank you for having me.
You have so much exciting things coming up.
Yeah.
And then just so great to hear what you do as a composer as well.
Well, thank you for letting me talk about it.
Yeah, of course, of course. But before we go, where can people find you on social media?
Oh, on Twitter and on Tumblr, I am Brian with an H, spelled out because I have a middle initial and everybody always forgets it. So Brian with an H on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. It's all the same handle.
Okay, perfect. And on Instagram, you could find me at Chelsea Overocker, and on Twitter at Chels Overocker. Thank you guys so much for watching our Beverly Hills 90210 special. See you later. Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.